Hello, and welcome back to the Masonic Roundtable, a weekly program where Masons from around the world get together to talk about Masonic news and opinions in a friendly and social manner. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions expressed here are solely the opinions of the participants and do not represent any Grand Lodge statements or positions. Make sure you keep your conversations open for the public and on the level. To interact with us, you can send questions and comments along the YouTube stream tonight, and as soon as I figure out what went wrong, the Facebook stream as well. So stand by for that if you're waiting on Facebook, but otherwise, how would you hear me? You know me. I'm John Ruark, past master of the Patriot Lodge number 1957 in Fairfax, Virginia. Let's go to the next host tonight, and that would be Jason Richards. Good evening.
Good evening. Did you mess up the stream key again?
Probably.
I think you did. Yes. Anyway, for those on Facebook land,
play me off.
You wouldn't know anyway because John did some things. Anyway, I'm Jason Richards, past master of Acacia Lodge number 16 in Clifton, Virginia, member of the Colonial Lodge number 1821 in Washington, D.C.
Excellent.
And I know how to cut and paste the correct stream key.
Whatever. It's been 2 weeks. I've forgotten everything. Next up, Robert Johnson. Good evening and hello.
Hey, everybody. Robert Johnson, past master Waukegan, Lodge 78, current sitting secretary at Space Novum 1183 in downtown Libertyville, Illinois. Good to be with you guys. Thanks.
Great to be with you. And last but not least, the one, the only, Joe Martinez.
Hello, I'm Joe Martinez. I don't have a cool high-def camera like everybody else, so I'm going to go back to normal here. And Joe Martinez. Yes. What am I doing this week? I'm the senior warden of Manassas Lodge number 182 in Old Town Manassas, Virginia, and a bunch of other stuff. And I'm a guest host tonight on TMR.
Woohoo! All right. So before we get into tonight's topic, as always, I want to give a special shout out to the patrons who've been supporting the show and having a lot of good chats over in the Facebook land. So salute to all of you. Cheers. It's been fun seeing new books people have been getting this week in the past 2 weeks, what everyone's been reading, what everyone's been thinking about. So it's fun really just to interact and talk about nerdy Masonic stuff. So if you want more of that, head on over to patreon.com/the Masonic Roundtable and, you know, chip in a few bucks and we love to chat with you. So that's cool. Let's go over to our third and final after a 2 week hiatus. Thanks. Thanks for one airline for having a little bit of delay in Joe's schedule. So we had to bump out at the last minute, but here we are on our third and final phase of initiation. So in the previous two episodes, we were using Van Gennep's, framework of the liminal phases of initiation or rites of passage. And so we started with the preliminal or separation phase, went to the liminal or threshold phase. And then now, finally, we have gone through the door, we've gone through the pillars, and we are at the post-liminal or incorporation phase.
Reintegration.
Or integration or reintegration, or we'll talk about that because it could mean any or all of those things. And I'm going to let Joe expand a little bit more on what does the post-liminal phase incorporate. What does it mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, thanks to everybody for being patient with us during our little hiatus here. But so we're at the end. We're at the third phase for Van Gennep. This is his end phase. We're going to talk about some other folks tonight where this is not the end of the road when it comes to rites of passage. For anybody that reads Joseph Campbell, this is not the end of the road here. But for tonight's purposes, that third phase, that incorporation phase, or as some other people like to call it, reintegration or reaggregation, basically the rite of passage is consummated or completed by the actual initiate, right? So he or she is no longer an initiate. They have now completed that rite and are now both a new member of that society and a new person in the world at large. So they assume that new identity and they re-enter society with this new status that they have. And depending on the type of rite of passage that we're talking about, not necessarily Masonic initiation or initiation in general, it can mean many different things to many different people, but it's really the culmination of all these elaborate rituals, ceremonies, Things like, you know, we'll talk about the mundane ones, the non-Masonic or non-initiatory ones. And there's usually some sort of outward symbol that this person has this new role in their life. So again, it's that final pivotal step, and Van Gennep, you know, colored them and covered them very well, in his book, The Rites of Passage.
And there you go. So one thing that I always like doing, because obviously it applies to rites of passage, and we immediately think of it in a Masonic concept, but before we go to that, it really does help to find some analogous comparisons of other rites of passage, even modern ones in today's society, and what that means. So looking at some non-Masonic examples, here are a few that come to mind of what the incorporation phase looks like. And so just really to start off, really the one of the biggest ones where you are now completely into a new society or a new, you're a new person, that's marriage, right? So you actually have, you know, you've gone to the threshold and you've performed the ceremony with a priest or a city official. And then now you are no longer of your former life. You are integrated into this new union with your partner. So that's an easy one to see. Your old life is gone. You've separated from the act of being engaged, right? The separation phase from society. You've crossed the threshold of the actual ceremony and paperwork that goes with that. And then finally, you are now in the final incorporated phase as a new, you're returning back to society as a new couple, right? You are part of a new whole. Let's see. I'm going to let some other guys get a chance to throw out some examples. So, Jason, is there another example you can think of about a non-Masonic example of incorporation?
So, for me, I see it as that first professional job after graduating from college. You've worked all of this time to get to the threshold of that degree in your hand, and then being able to then transition to that job and starting work, that first day as a professional, after getting your degree, I think is a really interesting, at least to me, rite of passage that, you know, a lot of folks go through.
Yeah, and in fact, thinking about that example as well, like we literally say, like, "Hey, you're entering the real world now." You know, like that's the common joking phrase. You know, or when you get your first paycheck, right? That like, oh crap, it is a completely different world than what I used to know.
Taxation is theft.
every 2 weeks, exactly. You don't pay taxes; they take them. Let's see, Robert, let's think of another example of the post-liminal phase. Go.
First thing that came to mind was when I went through, I can't even remember what it was. It was some sort of a ceremony when I was, like, I don't know, like 10, 12 years old. When we went to I was in a Lutheran academy. So it was this really interesting thing where after we did the ceremony, I was considered like a part of the congregation or something. And it was like it felt like I was now like worth something, right? Now I'm with the in crowd. And so that was an interesting one. But I think commonly you might say something like baptism or your first communion or confessional or like whatever that like just little thing that you got to step over in the religious world, perhaps in some denomination that says, hey, you've now done the same thing that else has done, right? Maybe that surrender idea or whatever the case is. You're now a part of the congregation. You are, you know, in it and a part of the entire structure as a whole. Not like, it's almost like admitting you're now a cell in the body of something, mm-hmm. you know,
right. Mm-hmm.
A cog.
Part of something bigger than yourself. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and Joe, do you want to elaborate on that?
I do. And it's really interesting that Robert brought that up, because we brought up things like baptism in the separation phase. You know, so a lot of those religious rites where you are exactly becoming part of that society, we spoke about at length during the first session, where we were talking about how something like the rite of baptism is kind of all three of these phases at once, right? There really is barely a threshold, because you're separating and you're reintegrating, because it's all happening at the same time. And again, depending on, you know, what denomination you are and things like that, you know, for many Christians, just to use that as an example, the act of baptism separates you from that old life or that profane life and makes you a part of that larger congregation. So you're doing all three of these rites of passage in, you know, the 2 seconds that you're getting dunked in a tank. So that was a really good example, Robert. For me, I think one example that I found really profound was when you're in the military and you go to boot camp, or you go to basic training, whichever one it's called for you, and then you finally graduate, and it's like you're no longer a piece of junk that doesn't have a name. You know, you get to put your name on your uniform, and you actually you know, you have a job and you have a skill set, and you are, you know, they're considered a soldier, so, or a seaman or an airman, and whatever the Coast Guard calls themselves.
Guardian.
But love you, Coasties. But that graduation ceremony is a rite of passage, because you're no longer basically a piece of junk or a piece of crap. You're now whatever it is you signed up and swore to be. So I think for me, that's a more poignant example outside of the Masonic universe.
Yeah, it's interesting too to use to carry on the baptism theme as well, that in Van Gennep's research, I mean, he looked at all these different like tribal rites of passage as well, with many of them including like blood oaths, right? Or you share blood, or you share water, right? And or you are breaking bread together as a new member of the society. And so lustration, the act of lustration, which just basically means the washing, a ritual washing, which can include baptism, I mean, is a post-liminal process that you are now, after that, you are now in. And one thing that was fascinating reading his book, he was talking about how just, you know, you can, as we've said in the other two episodes, these things can be macro, like once in a lifetime changing things, or these can be little things along the way. And so, if you look at the example of lustration in the act of holy water, the mere fact of entering a Catholic church and crossing yourself with holy water, right, that is a small act of lustration. And so not only have you separated from the other world, you're now integrating or reintegrating with the Catholic body. And so I think that's fascinating, because you could do that every time you come in, right? So it's not your baptism, but it is at a smaller scale.
Well, to your point, I love that you brought up the term lustration, right? Because, you know, I consider myself a Christian, but, you know, sorry to, you know, spoil it, but Christians did not invent baptism, right? It's not something that was exclusively Christian, right? But to you, yeah, sorry.
Whoa, whoa.
Spoiler alert.
Hey, we're not in a lodge. Shut up.
We just lost like the two people from Texas who watch. Right, come on.
Sorry, guys. But the reason why it's what you said was interesting is because, let's take the old pre-Second Temple, or I'm sorry, pre-Herod's Temple concept of lustration. They had lustration pools all over the temple grounds, right? And when you were starting to make your way towards the temple, you did the ritual bathing or the washing, what John was alluding to. Lustration by itself just means ritual immersion in water, right? Not for any extended period of time. You're not getting soap and scrubbed. But in you know, the old Hebrew temple period, those pools were there so that you could cleanse yourself, so that you could be clean enough, quote unquote, to start to approach the temple.
It's probably cleaner than the Jordan.
I just a wee bit. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, Christians use it in a completely different way, right? Because it's more of a death and resurrection scenario as opposed to I'm washing the awfulness of the earth away from me, you know? So, two different ways that, you know, a rite of passage, and you could, to John's point, you could, it could be a little rite of passage each and every time that you do it. It's the same act is being done for two separate purposes, you know, in two separate veins of, you know, an Abrahamic religion, which I find really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the last big one I wanted to mention too was what we do with infants and how do we incorporate infants into society? Because we've talked other examples about like circumcision is a rite of separation, but then there are other rites of incorporation into society that we have, like when we give them a name, right? Because before they're just this, this nameless human, and then giving them a name, giving them a social security number, right? They are able to be taxed by the government for many years to come.
Oh God, I'm so glad you went there. I was going to bust in and say, the only reason you have to give them a name is so they have a number, and they need a number so they can be a fictitious employee of the United States government, which is why your name is spelled in all capital letters, because it doesn't refer to you as the flesh and blood entity. But I digress.
Also, there's the act of nursing with the mother. There's also the, mm-hmm. the first tooth. When an infant gets its first tooth, we celebrate that. So baptism itself, right? These are all rites of incorporation into even modern society.
What do you guys think though about those things, Brett? Because most of them are religious in nature. So are there like quote unquote secular versions of integration for children? I've been wondering about that this afternoon as we kind of got ready for this, because I thought, well, you know, circumcision that goes back to, you know, Judaism and we've got, you know, baptism, which, you know, we have it in several different religious systems. First tooth, right? Maybe that's one. That's kind
what of interesting. What are the firsts do we celebrate, right? As a community.
I think a big first that's celebrated in different ways in different religions is puberty, right? That's a little bit older in the scale, but that is like the ultimate and I think most basic rite of passage.
Yeah, that's
you celebrate that's probably that with the bar mitzvah birthday. Yeah.
Well, you just hit it on the head. A lot of them do have religious significance, right? A bar and a bat mitzvah is a coming of age for a specific religious sect. You can go the Latin American route and go towards quinceañeras, you know. This is when you're becoming a woman, when you're flowering into a woman. We turned it into sweet 16s and throw awesome parties with DJs and stuff like that. So that could be a bit more secular. But, I mean, it could be something as simple as getting your driver's license or graduating high school. You know, those are things you should only do once. Some people twice, you know, depending. You know, they're definitely not religious in nature, but, there's probably a lot of firsts that we overlook too, that aren't really rites of passage, especially with our kids. Right.
I thought about like the first time my wife cut my kid's hair, it was always a big to do. And she's like, it's the first haircut.
Well, first like, words. Really? How about that? First words, because they are actually speaking the language of the culture that they're in. And we celebrate that. Oh, and I remember that mm-hmm. so-and-so's first word was blank. And because that is a milestone that has incorporated them into at least the local clique. So, yeah, that's a really good question. That's a secular example of that.
Which kind of leads right into the ideas of Freemasonry. Because even though it's religious, I mean, it's supposed to be secular.
Right. We're not a religion, but we are religious. So let's talk Masonic then. How about that? Let's go over to some Masonic examples. So Jason, give me a Masonic example of what this post-liminal phase looks like. How do you know that you're in at that point?
When you go back downstairs after hearing the final charge and you're greeted with a giant bowl of green beans.
Ha! And there's Joe's camera. Joe had to leave.
Joe had a Tourette's moment, so I went off cam. I'm not going to agree with that.
For me, I think, what I saw as a post-liminal moment was the first time I sat in lodge as a master mason, and I was able to go upstairs for the opening of the lodge. That to me was, since in Virginia, you can't go to, you can't attend a meeting unless you're at the master mason level. So actually, being able to go upstairs after dinner and sit through the entire thing, which consisted of a lot of talking, introducing, and reading of the minutes, it was, one of those things where you you're in and you've reached that pinnacle.
You know you're in when you've heard your first reading of the minutes.
Yes.
I still remember my first time. We had green beans.
I was like, wait, we just did all this. Why are we talking about it again?
Joe, you're doing the survey right now, right? Trying to figure out who reads minutes, right?
I am, yeah. Because here in Virginia, there's going to be some stuff brought up in November. So I was trying to gauge basically a national audience. I think I've gotten an answer from every single state, which is phenomenal.
Nice.
I think there's a couple of hanger-ons. Alaska, anybody from Alaska, get on Facebook.
Let me do some visualizations for you. It'll be a fun exercise.
Okay. I'm game. Let's throw some AI at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Go ahead, Joe. You're going to say something.
I forgot what the question was. Oh, how did you know? That whole part of the legend where we're raised as a Master Mason. I think for me, it was both the most jarring, and I had it done in a different jurisdiction than Virginia, but, still the same, if done properly, it is a very jarring experience, but if it's done well and the ritual is done well, you do absolutely get a sense of reintegration after that fact. So for me, it absolutely was that moment. I couldn't think of another moment, but, back to Jason's point a little bit, the first time I saw the degrees being done as an observer, as opposed to, having them done to me, was really profound as well, because, without a blindfold on, I kind of got what was going on and I understood, and it started to connect a lot of dots for me. But my reincorporation moment was the raising part.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially the act immediately after raising. Yep, that's a good point. How about you, Robert? Any other post-degree examples?
Oh, man. There's so many that I can think of, even jokingly, but half serious, right? Like the first time somebody corrects your ritual.
They wouldn't do it if they didn't care.
Yeah, right. How about the first time you forget to show up for something and then they assign you to the ladies' luncheon committee? All of those things really make you feel great.
I think that's how I became junior steward.
We're joking, but it's kind of funny, right? I think honestly, it's lodge by lodge flavor. My lodge is a really heavy, my mother lodge is a really heavy, like blue collar working man's lodge, like tons of HVAC guys, tons of military guys. So I knew I was in when they started giving me crap all the time. And I'm like, what are you guys? It took me a while to understand that they were just razzing me because that's what they do.
If they didn't like you, they'd ignore you.
That's true. But also before I was like in, I remember sitting at the table with these guys and I'd be like, so what do you do for a living? And I remember distinctly one guy said, I buy and acquire things and sell them. That's all I'm telling you. And I was like, oh, that sounds illegal. Right? I didn't say that a lot. But afterward, I found out he was just like a swap meet guy. But like, he wasn't ready to give me anything until he knew I was for real going to go through with this and return my proficiencies and go through the work and do all the stuff. And it was just, there's no way to really describe it, right? Because I mean, it is, it's like this weird, profound moment of realizing, oh, you know, you could tell somebody all day long, hey, when you're done with this, now all of a sudden you've got a million new best friends, but you're like, oh, that's cool. But then you go through it and you're like, oh, this is for real. It's weird.
That is such an amazing truth. And I think for people that stay in their own local lodge and never venture past it, you're missing out on, you know, probably on some of the most profound experiences you're going to have with other people. I could absolutely tell you the first time I went to a lodge outside of the state where I was raised, and to Robert's point, that warmth and that, you know, genuine care and that just feeling of affection that you get from a complete freaking stranger. You can't put it into words, and I'm doing a really crappy job of putting it into words, but it's so profound.
Well, that's a really good observation, because that relates to the one I was going to bring up, which was just like literally the hearty handshake right after the degree. When they close lodge, you've gone through the tail end of your first meeting, right? And so then you get people who you maybe at times knew as friends, and now you know them as brothers. And they're coming up to you, congratulating you, and then maybe the congratulations carry on into, you know, a restaurant or a bar afterwards, right? And so when I was looking at Van Gennep's, acts of not only illustration, but sharing a meal, breaking bread together, that's the first thing I thought of, is like, hey, when you go out to the bar afterwards and grab some, you know, grab some food and hang out and carry that conversation into the night. Like, it seems simple, but it's also very profound at the same time, that it's, you are now one of them.
It's profound. And maybe this is kind of a weird thing to say to the general public, because I don't know if everybody's like this. I come from like my mom's an Italian lady. So we have like this really kind of heavy Latin flavor to the household growing up. Joe gets this. I know that. But like, you kind of pick and choose who your family is sometimes. And it is so weird, because you'll be like, oh, these are my brothers. And they're like, oh, that's cool. And people think that's really superficial or whatever. And it's like, no, I'm actually closer to lodge brothers than I am family related brothers. And people go, oh, that's just weird. I'm like, is it though?
No, it's not. I get to pick these guys. I didn't get to pick you.
And I guess that's what's weird, because it's also this, when you're reintegrated like this, it's almost like negative and positively charged particles, like just attracting. You've chosen to take on a charge and then, you know, be bonded rather than, you know, exactly. And then John, when you mentioned this idea of breaking bread, I remember, and I never really understood why we did this, but as a kid, you know, my uncles, you know, these super Italian guys, oh, they're Sicilian, so I shouldn't call them Italian, they'll get offended. They would like literally grab a loaf of bread, right? They're like, they're greasers, man. They're like wrenching on cars and stuff. And they just like dirty hands or whatever. And they just like grab the loaf of bread and they like rip a piece off and then like just pass it down the line. And I'm like, you go wash your hands, man. You know, but that just like,
I'm good.
Never really dawned him. But
it's pre-COVID.
You eat the bread. Pre-COVID. Yeah. We're talking, you know, 35 years ago. So it was just that act though of, oh, you get to sit at the table and here's the bread and you rip off some of the bread. It's just a really weird kind of symbolic thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. So next question is, without exact details, what part or parts of your Masonic ritual experience comprise the incorporation phase, if at all? So I'll give you time to think about that. The one that comes to mind, at least here in Virginia, is that after, you know, the various ceremonies and obligations we take, most of our degrees have a charge at the end. So a charge is usually a little mini lecture that it really outlines the duties that you are to perform as that level. So basically, it's the rule book at a small level of what the expectations of you, the new candidate, are as that level in Freemasonry. So we give you a charge, and that's basically saying, here's what we expect from you as you are being incorporated into our society. Would you agree or disagree with that, Jason?
I would concur with your assessment.
Excellent. Can you think of any other examples of the incorporation phase as it is experienced in our ritual?
It's good. I have one.
Okay.
But I'm going to try to dance around this. So all the brothers out there will get this. If you're not a brother yet, go join a lodge already. Jeez Louise, what do you
come on?
24.
Figure it out. Delta's not going anywhere, so.
We'll be dealing with Lambda in a couple months.
Probably. There's this idea that there is a portion of our work where you traverse the lodge room. And while you're doing this, you're escorted. And it happens a couple times in the degree. And in the earlier phase of the degree, maybe you're in kind of one position while you're being escorted. And then afterwards, not only are you, a lot of people figure this out. They're like, oh, you're referred to as brother now, not mister or whatever, right? But then there's like subtle things too. In particularly, you know, during your escorting afterwards of your obligation, let's say, there's a difference in positioning to where you are being escorted. And this was described to me as like, you were an outsider, now you're an insider. And that always really stuck with me. And when he said that, I was like, oh, that's really kind of potent. Because from that point on, anytime I was, let's say, a senior deacon, I made sure that I followed that rule and let the candidate know, in fact, that that's why we did it the way we did it. So that was interesting too. And that's based on ritual. But I also thought, like, it's not ritual, but signing the bylaws. But it's not ritual, so.
It's part of the experience.
Sure, yeah.
All right, so this is one that we've kind of danced around in other ones, and I think the answer should be similar, but the real question is incorporation a one-time event, or can it occur at multiple points in one's journey? So what do you think about that, Joe? Is the act of integration or incorporation a one-time event or not?
I think it's supposed to be a one-time event, but then I also think that touching on to what Robert was saying, and back all the way back to what you were saying about lustration, I think it's good to have gentle reminders. What I was going to say about the last question was my answer was going to be the coming around the altar. Some jurisdictions, you know, actually do a chain of union, which I think is absolutely beautiful. In Virginia, we don't do it. We kind of sort of, but not really. But when you come around the altar to close the lodge and get that final charge that Jason was talking about, not all jurisdictions do that as well. But that for me is that incorporation moment every single time we close lodge. You know, you're there, you're all together, you're in a circle, and you're basically without being religious, you're rechristening yourself to your duties and those charges that you're talking about. And again, in some places, people are holding hands and being really profound about it, which I think is super awesome. So, yeah.
Excellent. How about you, Jason? What do you think about, is a corporation a one-time thing or can it happen multiple times?
So I think there can be different levels of incorporation. And so, you know, there could be an instance where you go through an initiatic experience and you are incorporated into part of the whole. And then you are later incorporated to more of the whole. So I liken this to going through my initiation ritual in Phi Mu Alpha in college and getting incorporated into the whole of the chapter as a full-on brother, and then going to, you know, the Phi Mu Alpha convention for like all of the Northeast. And so you were incorporated into a smaller group, but then once you go to that convention, you meet brethren from across the country, and that is a whole nother type of incorporation for the same initiatic event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like going to Grand Lodge. Grand Annual Communication.
I always had a lot more fun at Phi Mu Alpha events than Grand Lodge.
Well, there you go. You know, and then, of course, for me, I looked at it as if you receive further light through appended bodies, right, you are getting reincorporated into a new body every time you go through a degree there. So, you know, it's you are now at this level and you have been exposed to and now are the keeper of certain secrets of that rite or body. So just like, you know, you're doing, of course, all three of those phases, but yes, that means you're also incorporated. You really can't go backwards, which is interesting, right? You can't get demoted in Freemasonry. You do have... can you look? I got Robert thinking about that one, right? But you know, once once you receive it, but you can't unring a bell because you've already been exposed to that degree. So it's like, you know, people who get like top secret security clearances, right? Once they see where the aliens are, then they have to they just basically say, okay, if I quit, I can't for the rest of my life tell people where the aliens are, right? That, and so the same is true. Like you're incorporated, but you're kind of stuck. But you're still getting incorporated every time, and that's really what I'm trying to kind of hit on, is that you're at that level. You've been exposed. You're now in with this inner cabal, right? To get all the conspiracy theorists out.
And even if you leave, you're considered, I mean, you'll forgive the analogy, but I mean, a Masonic Judas at the point, right? Like you're shunned.
Outright quit, right. This,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Pariah. Yeah.
One of the things that was kind of interesting is, as you guys were talking about this, I was thinking, I immediately had this weird vision of Jason making a soup. Jason, if people don't know, Jason cooks really well and does all this great chef stuff. Look at that chef. And I'm making this analogy of Freemasonry kind of being a soup. Right, you throw all the ingredients in and you're integrated, and there it takes this action of like stirring to ensure that you're consistently a part of the soup. But like if you make some soups, right, like if you stop stirring them, things start separating and maybe the oils start coming to the top or whatever. It takes, and so those different kinds of like ingredients and parts start to like kind of separate without an action. And maybe that action is like further degrees, as John was talking about, or participation, right? Like it takes some action on your part still to be integrated. Of course, you're still in the soup, but you're not always integrated. So integration is a constant process of a soup that Jason's making. I don't know.
So it's funny because in my Facebook memories, like it just came up like yesterday that it was like 5 or 6 years ago that I was a senior warden in my lodge making soup for our grandmaster's official visit.
No green beans?
Woo-hoo. Nope.
There were green beans in it, right? No.
Okay.
We've already got people doing a drinking game every time we say green
creamy,
beans.
Creamy potato.
Really? Soup. I made green beans tonight. 12 minutes, 450
I did
degrees.
Too.
Hey, all right.
I sauteed mine with a little bit of garlic, paprika, salt, and pepper.
You know, it's like that scene in It's a Wonderful Life, you know, where every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings. Every time you say the word green beans, Joe Martinez dies a little inside.
I die a little inside. It's a fact. Yeah, tune in next week for Soup Alchemy by Robert Johnson.
That's correct. I make awful analogies, but they stick sometimes.
It's kind of like a boot. What? Okay. The next section, next question. Which part of incorporation is the most meaningful to you? Is it the incorporation of physically joining a group? Is it the incorporation of mentally moving on to the next stage? Is it an emotional or spiritual connection? So I'll let you guys think about that. And, you know, I'll kind of answer initially to say that as you're going through it the first time, there is the physical act of joining something, right? You have the fraternal aspect, the exoteric part of masonry where you're like, hey, I'm a Mason now. I can wear the lapel pins and the bumper stickers and all that. And I can wear the hats with the logos on it. So you get that right away. And that is I'm not gonna lie. It's a good feeling, right? You are in, I am in. I can say that I am a Mason now. I can say that, you know, I can tell people how proud I am to be part of that. And then you get those other levels. So let's head over to Jason. What do you think? What part of incorporation was meaningful to you? Or which parts? There could be more than one.
So I'm big on inclusivity and being wanting to feel included and then also, you know, including others. And so for me, reintegrating into the bigger community of masonry and integrating into the bigger fold as a master mason was, I think that was probably the pinnacle of my experience, at least at that point in time.
Well, there you go. I know Joe is super spiritual, mental. Well, you're mental, but you're also spiritual too. So what do you think about the final act of reintegration?
No, 1,000%, you know, I would go with the spiritual aspect, but the same things that Jason touched on, the spiritual aspect of entering your regular community, you know, as that new being, or as you think that new being should be. And as well as, you know, just like Jason said, becoming part of something new. So it's a dual aspect. And for both, there's a different side of spirituality to it, right? It's like, here's, you know, how I define myself as a person now, and how I view my spiritual nature, both in my old community and in my new community. And you notice, I think for many Masons in particular, they change.
I'm glad you brought that up.
You know, in that public sense, or at least they should. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's just profound in and of itself, watching that change happen.
Yeah, I agree. I know there's always one example. I know Mason that you probably also know that says, I don't want to put a square compass on my car because I drive like an a-hole. And I'm like, dude, like, you're totally missing the point of being a Mason. Like, if you don't want to put a square compass on because of the way that you haven't really thought about how you represent the craft, then maybe we should go through the degrees again, because that's the
something
whole
about subduing your passions.
You know, maybe it's in there somewhere, page one. I don't know, right? Because, yeah, that's a great point. When you are incorporated, when you are a Mason, when you're wearing that logo, you're representing the craft, and you have to carry the baggage that comes with that, right? You know, same thing for religions, right? When you see people who are religious and they're not acting as their religion instructs them to, you get that sense of hypocrisy. And we don't want to see that. We don't want to represent ourselves that way. And we don't want to give either ourselves or the fraternity a bad name. So when you're incorporated, like, it's a big commitment. It's a it's an obligation. But some people take it more seriously than others. How about you, Robert? What's your favorite part of incorporation?
I don't know, man. It just feels like the incorporating process began when I threw a petition in. And it was just this kind of slow absorption until I was, you know, on the inside. I'm fighting another analogy. It just feels like the whole time you're being kind of absorbed, and you're testing boundaries along the way, and people opening up a little bit more, a little bit more. I think truthfully, the first time I felt really integrated was probably going to ritual practice and being treated like I was not just some idiot. And that was for me probably an emotional connection with that whole thing, which then, you know, of course leads into a spiritual deepness, like later on, a spiritual fulfillment, knowing that I'm a part of this thing. So, people know I'm like not a ritual vulture. I love ritual, but I'm not all about it. And I don't like ritual people who like dog on other people if their ritual's stinky or whatever. But I love the act. I love doing it. And I think that was a really important part in my integration, because up till that point, I really didn't know if I was going to go to this practice and stand up and, you know, am I going to stand up and do this silly thing? And then everybody's like, oh, we really don't do that. Ha ha. Look at that idiot. Like, who knows? Right. But yeah, like, I don't know. It was just a really cool moment for me.
Okay, so here we are at the final question of the night, and the question goes to Jason first, which is, does Masonry stand as this rite of passage in these three phases that we've talked about for the past month, and does it still have that impact today that other rites of passages do? So go ahead, Jason.
That's a complex question with a nuanced answer.
I'm good at those.
Yeah. So I think when your degree is done well and the candidate is truly excited and prepared for the degree, then I think it is profoundly impactful as a rite of passage. I think if you're just going through it, and it's kind of, this is like college. I'm just here, you know, to be part of the guys. I think there is a lot that the candidate misses out on. But it is really up to the candidate and the brethren both to observe the solemnity of the initiatic experience and the initiation ritual. And when that solemnity is done thoughtfully and done well, then the degree system is profoundly impactful. So yes, I would say when done right and done well, it stands the test of time as perhaps one of the most impactful experiences of one's life.
Well, there you go. Excellent. Let's head over to RJ for his thoughts. Does Masonry stand as a rite of passage today in society, and does it accomplish those goals that are defined in rites of passages? You're muted, RJ.
It's only been like 2 years since we've been on Zoom and doing all this stuff. Sorry. I think it absolutely is this rite of passage. It's it does all of those things. And I think to the extent at which it affects you is directly attributed to your, as weird as this sounds, level of consciousness, your level of openness to things. So for instance, if you're a super spiritual person and you go through this rite of passage, it is my hope that you felt something spiritual. If you're just a guy who did this and, you know, never came back, maybe you didn't feel anything because maybe this was kind of a superficial thing for them. But I think more often than not, this is absolutely a quote unquote modern day rite of passage that offers something of extreme value, of extreme importance. And I don't mean that in any superficial way. I mean that in terms of psychological importance, spiritual happiness. The world is bigger and there's more people, and yet we're more disconnected, I think. So the Masonry offers a rite of passage and a way to connect with people again in ways that for a lot of people didn't really understand even existed. And I think when you get woke up to those things, when that spiritual awakening happens for you, and you find out that, yes, you know, there are horror stories. Some guys don't like their lodge or whatever the case is. But when you'll find the right lodge, you'll find some brothers, you know, some that you connect with, and it makes all the difference. And I think you wouldn't have had that, right? What is the line from Ritual? Unites men who otherwise would have remained at a perpetual distance. And I think it accomplishes a great service to humanity.
Okay, Joe, what say you?
Well, all the awesome answers were taken, but no, I think that it absolutely is. It is relevant, and the degrees of Freemasonry, the way we understand them now, 3.5 centuries later, they are the modern day hero's journey. You know, they really are. You know, this is your monomyth, and it's whatever you put into it, in terms of care, in terms of preparation, and in terms of your deep commitment to really want to be a better person. You know, not just the crap you see on a bumper sticker, but your genuine desire to learn more about yourself. And in learning more about yourself, you'll be a better husband and a better father and a better steward of your community. This is, you know, I can't say this enough. This is your modern day hero's journey. You know, grab it by the horns and run with it and learn every single thing that you can. And if you do, it really could be one of the most profound experiences of your entire life. And I think that's starting to come back around. You know, I've heard all of you say that Masonry is cyclical or generational. But I think the type of person that's walking through the door today that I've seen has more of a reason to come to, you know, for spiritual purposes, or, you know, there's something inside of them that says, hey, this may be something for me, as opposed to, hey, I just want to join. So because my dad was, you know, or I want to join the shrine or something like that. I really do think that today's initiate is coming with a better sense of self, than they have in the past. So, you know, just, again, this is your own personal hero's journey. Run with it and just have the most amazing experience that you can.
Nice. Which sucks for me to go last because, again, all the great answers are taken. Thank you, Joe, for taking us through 3 weeks of mystical, you know, ritualistic interpretations of how we become better people. What does that process look like, and what frameworks do we go through? I do want to give a special shout out to Jason Valdez, who lit us up in the YouTube chat, and is one of the patrons who support the show. So thank you for the love, Jason. It's been great to know you, you know, offline or online, off real time internet. So let's see. Exoterically, yeah, you do get to get a dues card. You do get to wear rings and compasses. You do get to go to meetings, right? So exoterically, you've accomplished that goal of you're in now. You are part of society. You've this new weird society we have, and so you can be proud to say you're a Mason. But esoterically, if done right, you know, it can transform the individual into a new person that is separate from society and can now be reintegrated in society with a new set of eyes. I think other brothers I've talked to over the years, it's fascinating to say, oh, you know, now that I'm a Mason, I see things differently. And you get, and it's like, yeah, I know what you're talking about, but tell me more. And, you know, well, you know, I'm looking at the way, you know, buildings are built differently. The orders of architecture are different to me now. I'm looking at my interactions with people differently. I'm looking at how I interact with society differently. And it's through that rite of passage process that it can't be understated that had helped them accomplish that. It's not just like, hey, congratulations, you know, you're in the Elks now and you can have free access to the bar or whatever. Like, we have a specific purpose in mind for a ritual, and that's what's beautiful about it. So this has been great. I want to thank Joe Martinez for coming on for the past 3 weeks to, you know, enlighten us with his research and his design on what this means in a modern day society. So with that, I really want to thank you very much for watching, and I hope you guys keep searching for more light. Have a good night.
Wow.